we get it because we turn down stuff like that
all the time. They fly
people
out to Hawaii.
People are constantly asking us. They're like, guys, you've been doing this for 7 years. Yeah. Now is your moment. And we're like, no, let other people.
Right,
we've got our thing.
People said, interview Oprah. We said, nope.
We said, no, thank you. What are we going to learn from Oprah?
Yeah.
Advertise the website, call it the website for the podcast. That's really how this actually works. This is episode number 312, which is almost Orlando's area code.
Oh.
And I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Ash.
And we're back on the second floor of our super secret Westin Hotel.
Yeah.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, we just revealed
it. In San Diego.
At the Westin. Pretty far from anything.
We managed to not shit on it on the first episode. We didn't even talk about it, but it is removed. Or did we talk about it?
No, we didn't. I don't think we did talk about it, but it's pretty far. The silver lining, we got lots of exercise.
I walked 52 miles this week.
That's not a joke, guys.
That's real. I walked an actual 52 miles this week.
52 miles at Comic-Con. We used to put a thing out back when we would actually write articles for the site about Comic-Con survival and how this guy, kind of logged how far that he went in the weekend. Mm-hmm. And Matt went farther than the guy who was claiming that he went really far. I think the guy in that article walked like 25 and we're like, this is crazy.
52 miles.
Yeah.
It's over a mile walk from here to the convention center. And then it's like a mile and a half to go from here to the Hilton, which we did a couple times.
Right.
And then I also am just an idiot and I walk everywhere all the time. So
we did manage to take a couple scooters.
Couple times. I did scoot post last episode. I did a couple scoots.
It's pretty fun. I had a good time scooting.
It's not bad. It feels, if it shows up in New York, I will rage. I will lose my mind if they show up in New York. They do not belong in congested cities.
No.
It would be a nightmare.
Right. And there were times where riding one was pretty treacherous.
Yeah.
I had a couple where the throttle would stick and I would just kind of zip off into the sunset.
Yeah, I had the brake sticking and I would like almost pitch over the handlebars.
Right. So it's Sunday night and man, am I tired. I get on a plane early tomorrow morning to head back to the East Coast.
I was talking to your wife about this. We've both been extended travel. We didn't just do Comic-Con. We came out early and went to LA.
Yeah.
You came out early and went to the Bay Area. And yeah, I'm ready to just like go pet my dog.
Yeah, yeah, I hear that. I'm ready to kind of just, you know, be in pajamas for a couple days, which will be super nice. But let's talk about what we did on Saturday and Sunday at Comic-Con. And just for our listeners, we also have a bunch of interviews that will be in your feeds that we've been conducting over the course of the trip. So you have a lot of extra bonus fun content coming your way. So thanks for listening to that ahead of time. We appreciate it. I think the interviews went really well, and I think you guys are going to like them.
Yeah, I agree. So that was part of what we did on Saturday.
We did.
Right? Yeah, Saturday.
Yeah, we talked to Dan Hutton, who is the voice of Kate Marsh in Life is Strange, and she finally kind of completed, I think, the principal voice cast that I've kind of always wanted to have on the show. And she's just like a huge, you know, fan of pop culture and super easy to talk to because she's into like all the same fandoms that we are. So so I'm glad we finally had her on and kind of like not really. Well, we've been attempting for a while to be in the same place at the same time. And it's always kind of a scheduling issue. But we finally got it done. And that's a really fun interview you guys will get to hear in your feeds.
So we did that. And then I bounced around the floor for a little bit and then went to some offsite stuff with Melissa. We went to the FX offsite thing that they have every year and did some pictures and went to Legion and all that kind of thing. And then I tried to catch you on another interview, missed that one, bounced back to the Indigo Ballroom. This is why I did 52 miles this week.
Well, I felt bad because I kept like changing locations on you today. Like we did an interview today and I was like, oh, it's not at that hotel. It's at this hotel.
It's all right.
And it's like, you know,
that stuff happens. It's like not in anyone's control. Especially these things. I mean, one of the people that we wanted to interview was so crazy busy that we didn't even get to connect with him, and I've known the dude for like 15 years, you know, like it's just Comic-Con's insane and everybody gets a free pass for things moving and changing and not, you know, like it's not, this is not like, oh, we're all in LA doing nothing or San Diego doing nothing. Like, let's do an interview. Like, it's a extenuating circumstances by far.
Right.
But I bounced back to the Indigo and I caught two panels. I caught Sci-Fi's new show coming in 2019 called Deadly Class,
which is a
show based on a Rick Remender comic. And you'll know Rick Remender's name because I'm a giant fan of him and have talked about, I think, every Image and Marvel series he's put out in the past however long we've been doing this podcast. I actually think we talked about his X-Force run on the first episode of this podcast ever.
We may
have. Rick Remender's X-Force.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite runs of X-Force. Yeah.
Crazy.
So he had a book called Deadly Class. It's this really cool series set in the 80s, kind of like punk rock 80s scene, where these kids are brought into this kind of secret school and trained to be assassins.
Oh, wow.
But they're not just any kids. They're kids with like troubled pasts and difficult things that they've overcome. And it's very layered, very cool. We got to see a bunch of footage from it, which is awesome because nothing had been released yet on the show. And it looks like amazing.
Oh, really?
Like, I'm very excited to see this show now.
I was pretty
excited just because I like Deadly Class and I like Rick Remender. But now I'm like, oh, man, they
Sci-Fi is like
did a really good job.
The level of quality
from
like Sci-Fi in 2010 compared to Sci-Fi now. It might have been Battlestar Galactica that kind of changed them, but
I actually, well, no, because that's old.
Is it? Is it older?
Yeah, I actually think it's The Expanse and Magicians were the most recent true turning point. Battlestar was what they were trying to get back to. That's how old.
Yeah,
Battlestar was like 07 or 08.
Doesn't feel that old, but I guess it is. Probably is.
It looked really awesome. It's a super diverse cast, which was really cool to see. There's an Asian lead, an Hispanic woman, a black guy, which wasn't very common at this panel. We saw a lot of white dude panels, which was discouraging at times, but this was not the case. Rick Remender was there. He talked about still being in control of it. The artist, whose name I'm going to forget, and I'm very sorry, it's Will something. He talked about how he didn't want to have it be like Watchmen. Like, he didn't want it to be panel for panel. He just wanted it to honor the source material.
Right.
And man, they did a really killer job. Everybody should look out for this show coming in 2019. Deadly Class looks awesome. I'm very excited about it now. So and they kept all the music too. They have like all the original like 80s punk. There's Descendants and you're going to love the soundtrack.
The soundtrack's
amazing.
I'm so ready.
So that was really cool. I can move to the next panel unless you've got something you want to talk about.
I'll briefly talk about I got to do the Cloak and Dagger press room, which a lot of times to kind of kick roundtable interviews in the NADs, they can be rough because sometimes you're with outlets that don't really know the source material well or just are... You know, sometimes you're at panels with people and they're kind of like not, or roundtables with other outlets, and they're just not the nicest people.
Yeah. We've discussed this before, I believe.
Yeah, we have. But I got really lucky because everyone that that I did questions with and such were great.
Cool.
And so I managed to kind of get a lot of questions out to the cast and crew of Cloak and Dagger. And man, it was just so cool to dig into the minds of the creators and the cast of this show because I'm loving it. I think they're on episode 8 or 9 now.
We started it and liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's on Freeform, but you know, these are characters that I grew up with, and they just always kind of appeared in different comics, and that was sort of their shtick. Like, you'd be reading Spider-Man, and all of a sudden Cloak and Dagger would show up, or you'd be reading, you know, Avengers, and Cloak and Dagger would show up, or you know, they were just kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
More recently in Runaways, they kind of show up for a small arc. So I always love the characters, and I love the design on them.
I wonder if they'll do crossover. Oh, I guess it's not. It's Hulu and Freeform.
Well, that's one of the things I actually asked Joe Pulaski, who's the one of the producers. He really wants to do a Runaways crossover.
Yeah, that'd be very cool.
Of course, there's a lot of like legal tape and things of that nature, but he was saying that he could definitely see the characters fitting into each other's worlds
seamlessly. Yeah.
And
Cloak and Dagger's in New Orleans?
It's in New Orleans, yeah. So it's really funny story. They actually cast Cloak and Dagger, the actors, Olivia Holt and Aubrey Joseph like 2 days before they started shooting.
Oh, really?
They were like down to the wire freaking out because they couldn't find the right cast. And then they did one of those tests where they kind of chemistry test, I guess it's called.
Yeah.
And they realized that these two are like perfect for each other and they cast them right away. And then they flew them to New Orleans, and that last big hurricane, the one that like obliterated my house, that one hit New Orleans right before they started shooting. So the cast kind of bonded.
Hanging out
through the hurricane.
No power and stuff.
But honestly, I'm going to have some of the audio from these roundtables in our feeds because the audio actually turned out pretty solid and I got a lot of questions off. But it's a great show, and you could definitely see that the cast has a lot of love for one another. And everyone had just like really great, smart things to say. They all have, they're all like, just from my brief conversations with them, we had like 8 minutes with each person. It was like, they all were kind of driven by how real of a world Cloak and Dagger set in and the real social issues that kind of tie the show together.
Yeah.
You know, it's set in a very real, and kind of dark timeline that we exist in right now. So, I think you guys will like that. And definitely check the show out if you haven't checked it out. It's really
cool.
Good.
So I closed out the night last night with Sci-Fi's The Magicians, a show that I did not watch when it started. Not by any choice. It actually looked, I saw the panel for the first season ever here and thought it looked really good and told Melissa about it. It was like, I think you'll like it. It looks really cool. She watched it, loved it. And then I came into it during season two and just tore through it. And like really liked this show. This show, I don't know if everybody that listens watches the show. It is better than you think it is the best way I can put it. It is very, very good. No matter what you think of it, it's a little bit better than that, at least. It is it's super endearing. The characters are written just amazingly with so much heart, so much like pathos behind them, and it's just really honestly like some of the best chemistry I've ever seen in a cast, like an ensemble cast, like seven people don't generally get along as well as these seven people seem to get along. And it was just such a great panel. It was hosted by Felicia Day.
No way.
And I'm going to say right now, if we need to replace Mr. Hardwick, which we do, I vote Felicia Day on
great
all these
moderator.
Big panels. Amazing moderator.
Really?
So much fun. Like laughing it up with everybody, knew what she was talking about, was on point with everything, could like handle the questions really well. I think it's just somebody who's been on camera a bunch and talked to a bunch of people and knows how to manage that part of it,
Right.
And granted, Magicians, she knows on another level because she's in season three, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But she was such a great moderator. It went so smoothly. Everybody was having so much fun up there. I will promote for a second that both Jason Ralph, who plays Quentin, and Stella Maeve, who plays Julia, had shirts on that said, go to their Twitter or go to their Instagram. They're raising money for a homeless shelter, and I think it's based in L.A., but I don't know if they do work outside of that, for at-risk teens, and they're just trying to get $10,000 for this
awesome
homeless shelter, which I thought was really cool. Go to their social accounts and look it up. But, it was so much fun. It was like, everybody was just laughing, and the showrunners, Sarah Gamble and John McNamara, were like joking it up with them and like hanging out, and it was just a really good time. And
it is a really fantastic show.
It is a super fantastic show. The quick snippet I will give without spoiling anything, because this is kind of how they end every season. Season three ends with everything getting fucked, like just everything's fucked again, So season three is recovering from season two where everything got fucked, which was recovering from season one where everything got fucked. So every one of their seasons is kind of this growing thing. And they went into Sci-Fi for renewal because they didn't have renewal yet, amazingly, even though I think the show does pretty well for Sci-Fi. And John McNamara said this was verbatim. He was sitting with the head of Sci-Fi and they were like, everything's fucked. Like, what's your plan for season four? And John McNamara went, if you want to know, pick us up.
Oh.
Sci-Fi was like, all right, fine, we'll pick you up. And they picked him up. And he said, like, a week later, they were like, so what are you guys going to do? And they're like, oh, we have no idea. And Felicia Day was, like, asked. She was like, so do you guys usually have a plan? Because, that seems to be how things go. Things get fucked up. And he was like, oh, no, not usually. We just kind of write. And then we're like, okay, well, we'll figure that one out next year. Like, they just try to put it in a scenario that screws everything up and forces them to figure out where characters will be and who is who and how to move it around.
Really interesting.
But it honestly, you know, I know I just talked up Deadly Class, and I know these are both sci-fi shows, but like you said, sci-fi is putting out... The Expanse was phenomenal. I think it was just too expensive and not pulling the numbers they needed.
Right.
But, like, Magicians is really good, and I really encourage everybody to watch it, and I really encourage everybody to watch it, like, either on cable DVR'd or on, I think it's on Netflix possibly, just anywhere that they can track it. Like,
yeah, it is on
we
Netflix,
we get lost
yeah.
on this notion that like all content should be free or whatever, and that's how our shows get canceled. So like watch it somewhere where people can track it and they can see people are interested in the show, because that'll keep the show getting made.
It's good.
It's important.
It's like it's very smart. It's very adult.
Yes. Oh boy.
It sounds like it's, you know, you may look at it at a glance and be like, oh, this is a weird like kind of Harry Potter. That's kind of what I thought at first, and it is not that.
They deal with some of the heaviest topics that exist to humankind. Like, they deal with stuff that, you know, people would put trigger warnings all over for. So just know that going in, it's a super adult show, but it is done so well and with so much heart. And they actually talked about the big thing in season one with Julia's character.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about the writing and the scene and all this stuff, and it, she talked about it with this notion that like everybody really cared and really loved what they were doing and were careful about how they, you know, talked about things and moved through different parts of the story. And she was like, it just really is a show that everyone that's working on it like loves and cares about, and you can really tell. It really is, like, it shocked me when I started watching it. It's a way better show than I even kind of imagined
it's,
it would
it's
be.
It's a show that is just, honestly, it's cool. You finish an episode, and you're like, oh, I feel like I'm, like...
Yeah.
It feels like you're reading a book. There's so many layers in the cinematography and the set design.
It actually has made me want to read the Lev Grossman books, which I've never read.
Yeah,
so.
It was really cool.
I will say, just because I made it just sound like the heaviest show ever created, they also have like musical episodes and do a lot of really goofy, fun things.
Oh, yeah.
And Ash and I's, or my two favorite characters, one of which is Ash's favorite character, is a character named Elliot and a character named Margo. The two of them have the funniest like dynamic, and they're amazing together, and everything that happens is super amazing. And like, it's just, honestly, it's a good show. Everybody
got to have them on the show. How do we do this? I don't have any ins at sci-fi.
I don't have any.
Sci-fi has never invited us to anything.
We've never gotten anything from sci-fi.
Come on, sci-fi.
Yeah.
Someone out there, give us a hookup. That's awesome.
We've had Felicia Day on, though, so technically
we have.
We've had one person from Magicians on.
That's true. It was weird. I got an email kind of randomly, like, in the middle of the afternoon on Friday or something like that, was like, hey, there's a Twin Peaks roundtable and panel.
Yeah.
Do you want to go? And I'm a huge Twin Peaks fan, as our listeners know, and as you are well aware.
Yes.
So I was beyond excited to meet some of the cast. It was a bunch of roundtables for season three.
Called season three, Ash.
Oh, sorry. The new season. I was beyond excited. I thought I was going to get to meet Sherilyn Finn and Mansion Emmick from the first season. They were not at these roundtables, so I was a bit bummed.
Right.
But I got to meet some of the original cast, and I got to meet a bunch of the new cast. And honestly, it was a great experience. The thing that I was really kind of excited to dive into was everyone that I talked to had these really wild David Lynch stories.
Yeah.
And I think of the five or six actors I talked to that worked on the show, four of the six all did impressions of David Lynch unprompted. So they were all just kind of broke into their David Lynch voices and told these wild stories of what the process was like working with him. And it's really interesting. And like, he's kind of notorious for this. But if you don't know anything about David Lynch, he doesn't, make you act during like your casting session.
Right.
So what he does is he invites you like to his house and you just hang out with him and talk with him.
That's crazy.
And then he apparently, according to the actors, he just kind of sizes you up, and either you are the character that he has in his mind or you're not.
Yeah.
And then there's really the script is very fluid, and it's kind of recorded in a weird sequence. And so none of the people that were working on the new season really knew
what was happening.
And they didn't know what the end product was going to be. And they didn't know, really what was happening. He would just say, okay, in this scene, here's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And he would kind of control them a bit like a puppet master. And, you know, I asked a lot of the actors if that was something that they were cool with, and were they, you know, cool with the end product, because I watched the latest season, and I didn't understand it, and apparently nobody did. So I, like, at first I felt like an idiot because I watched the whole thing, and I had,
right.
you know, I had watched the first two seasons a million times, and I understood those. And this season I just did not understand. So I was like, well, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm not, you know, looking at it the right way.
Yeah.
But all the other journalists were there and the actors, they're like, no, we don't get it either. But they said that David told them that it is what you interpret it as. So it's kind of like this blank slate, and you watch the show, and it's kind of like interpreting a piece of art on a wall, like what the main, you know, purpose of this piece of art, or what the gist of this piece of art is.
Hmm.
So that kind of made me examine, you know, the season differently, because I don't want to say that I was disappointed by it, but there were a lot of things I was kind of hoping it was going to be more like the first two.
Yeah.
Because I guess I had seen them so many times and I was comfortable with that. So this new season kind of left me feeling like a little bit wanting a little bit more. but it was good. It was good talking with them, and we may include some of the audio from that somewhere in our feeds. We'll see. I have to kind of go through that. There's a lot of it because there's so many of them.
Right.
So I have to see what's usable and what's not. But it was good stuff. Good talking with the cast of Twin Peaks.
Cool. Today was pretty chill for me. Melissa and I hung out in the morning and walked around a little bit, went to do some panels, sat in on a couple smaller panels that I was only partially in, so I don't really have much to talk about there. But the one panel we did do is one that she looks forward to every year, and it's called Super Asian America, and it is a Asian-run, led, fully paneled group of people who talk about sort of the Asian American experience in Hollywood and in the media, and kind of what could be better, what is working, what they're doing. Today's panel, it's usually just a mix of people. It's always run by a guy who does a blog and a few other things called Race Bending. His name is Mike Lee. And then Keith Chow from Nerds of Color is always on it as well. And then this year they had Ryan Potter, who voiced Hero in Big Hero 6.
Oh, cool.
And is going to be Beast Boy in the upcoming DC Universe Titans show. Mallory Yu, who's a producer for All Things Considered on NPR and a million other things. Tanya Kong, who's worked on Daredevil and a few other shows, and I think is the executive script editor for Arrow now. Joy, I'm not going to get her last name right, but she's done Modern Family, Supernatural. She had a ton of credits, and they were all pretty cool. And then I think somebody else showed up. I don't remember the last person on the panel. Somebody came in and surprised it wasn't listed on the panel. And he was from, he did the From Dusk Till Dawn TV show, I think.
Okay.
And it was super great. It was honestly, this year was a different twist. They talked about how the new focus kind of Nerds of Color and Race Bending is this notion of like, how do we promote and support the positive and stop focusing on the negative? And one thing Keith Chow said that was interesting was he was like that not focusing on the negative doesn't mean not being angry. Like, he can still get angry at Iron Fist. But they talked about a bunch of other things. They were talking about how kind of amazing DC is right now. So for all the heat DC takes from kind of the internet, you know, white dude rage fandom, in this panel, you would have no idea that was the case. Like, they were talking about how Titans is diverse, how it's got Asian and black leads, that, like, it's being led and written by Asian people, that their Arrow's got, you know, a gay, biracial, Asian woman running script editing, and then the showrunner's a woman. Like, they were, like, talking about, like, holy cow, DC's doing all of these things that are super diverse and leading the edge of this stuff. And, you know, where is Marvel was kind of their point at the moment. And that's interesting. It's a take. But they talked about this idea of, like, there are a lot of Asian Americans doing stuff right now. There's going to be Crazy Rich Asians coming out, you know, and you've got your Randall Parks and your Constance Wu's, like, these names that are kind of becoming big in acting. And it's like, well, what can we do when we go home to make this stick. And they were just like, spend your money. Like, go to YouTube and watch up-and-coming Asian stars who are doing things on YouTube. Like, just go out and support and just be there for your community. And that always really inspires Melissa. It's always, it's inspiring to me, honestly. It's just interesting to hear and be part of these other points of view. I was one of probably like 8 white people in the audience, you know, I mean, it was majority Asian by far.
Yeah. I've been in that panel before.
It's like not even close. It's
and
like,
then like I ended up having like white guy guilt where I'm just like, why don't I do more? You know?
Like, and I mean, but that's a good feeling to have. It's a good to sit in that for a minute and go like, well, what could I do to elevate other people who aren't me, you know? And
it's definitely informative, and it does, it makes you, have a different sense of awareness after you leave a panel like that.
Yeah.
Like I felt pretty inspired myself. I totally agree.
Yeah. So it was really great. It was a really great set of panelists again this year. I'm really amazed that they pull a good panel together every time. 2 years ago, it was super positive. I think Chloe Bennett was on it 2 years ago. And so was, Rufio.
Rufio. I forget his name.
Oh, we were both in that panel.
Yeah.
It was super positive, super happy, very like forward. So it's a really great panel. And Melissa and I talk about it every year, and you and I have talked about it years past. Sometimes you go into these smaller panels that have nothing to do with promoting anything other than, you know, an idea or an agenda or just support and doing things and being creative. And it was really cool to do this one this year. So
that's great.
Yeah. Very and then, cool. We went and bought some shit.
Yeah, today I was on sort of a family day for me, too. Sunday is generally, that's what we do. We kind of walk around and check out the show floor. I did do an interview with Markia McCarty from Marvel Movie News, and she's on HyperRPG and Nerdist stuff now. But it's so crazy. Like, I'm super stoked for her because she was on in November. She's like an Orlando expat.
Yeah.
And I interviewed her down in Orlando at the Orlando Public Library, and we talked about Marvel and had a good time. We actually ran into Amy, which was really
funny.
Awesome.
Yeah. Amy's wonderful.
And so we hit it off pretty well, and since then it's been insane. So she got picked up by Nerdist to do all sorts of event coverage, and they flew her out to Hawaii to cover like Jurassic Park, and she got to interview Oprah, and it's like all of a sudden since like November to now, it's like her just career has just really blossomed.
I mean,
and she's super great.
We get it because we turn down stuff like that
all the time. They fly
people
out to Hawaii.
People are constantly asking us. They're like, guys, you've been doing this for 7 years.
Yeah.
Now is your moment. And we're like, no, let other people.
Right,
we've got our thing.
People said, interview Oprah. We said, nope.
We said, no, thank you. What are we going to learn from Oprah?
Yeah, exactly.
The most powerful woman in the world.
But for real, the interview with Markia is super fun. That'll be in your feeds. We deep dive into Luke Cage. We deep dive into Cloak and Dagger. We deep dive into Teen Titans. We do some real like hardcore nerdy conversation about all those fun things. So
it's a fly.
So I think you guys will like that quite a bit.
That's awesome.
Look out for that one. Yeah. And now we're just kind of we went to Little Italy.
Yeah, we went to Little Italy because we're near there.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty close.
If you know San Diego, then you know we're very far from the convention center.
We're walking distance from the airport. but anyway, yeah, so this has been a wild adventure.
Yeah.
And we want to thank
What are your closing thoughts on the con?
My closing thoughts for the con. That's a good thing to close on. You know, I had a really great time. It's interesting. The walk was
miserable.
Rough.
We can just say miserable.
The walk was pretty rough, and the heat this year was I mean, not the hottest year, but pretty close.
Yeah, close. The worst was the floor had no AC, from what I could tell.
It was
just
pretty warm.
Hot.
Yeah, I was a damp gentleman all weekend long.
Yeah.
Beyond that, you know, it was great. It was like we mentioned the first one that we recorded. I felt like things were a little different. I felt like there were less activations. There were less like big on site. Like there was no Nerd HQ, there was no Comic-Con HQ, there was no, there were a couple other big ones in recent years. There was no like big offsite Xbox hall.
Sorry, I just had a thought.
Yeah.
Comic-Con HQ came and went fast.
2 years. It
like,
was 2 years.
Their runway was like nothing, apparently. They were like, we've got $10, let's see what we can do with a video service. And
gone
immediately.
It's
that's
a hard thing
scary.
To do. Yeah, I feel like there was a lot less of that.
Yeah.
And I understand, you know, it's a... it's a hard thing to manage. But I also think there were a lot of things that went really well. Like, they closed down Harbor Drive, which made walking to and from the convention a lot easier.
So much better.
Especially with a fucking stroller. Yeah. Oh, my God. So, like, walking with a stroller the days that, you know, I was taking care of my kid, that part was a lot easier. I was very thankful for that. I also felt like there were some things they did this year for the first time that were great. I don't know if you did any of this, but if you ever want to get autographs, it's like a lottery that you have to wake up early and wait in line for. Now they did a digital lottery this year.
They did. You still had to wait in line in the morning.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't win any.
So. No, I didn't win any.
Yeah,
either.
I didn't win any. So, So there was a digital lottery. I feel like there's.
I think it took some of the pressure off, at least.
Right.
You know?
They mail badges now. There's a lot of like things they're streamlining and improving upon. But that being said, it was weird because there was no, like, there were no. Everyone was saying this year there's no like big announcements. There really, I can't really think of any like big announcements like.
Sony announced something, and I'm blanking on what it was. And then DC rolled out their DC Universe stuff and kind of the shows. They premiered all their trailers and stuff. But yeah, no HBO, no Marvel.
Right.
No Showtime, even though we rarely do anything of any importance here. And then no real big, giant stuff. Everything's kind of in mid-swing, it seems.
Yeah.
Like a lot of shows are just kind of, there's nothing big and new coming out that's giant. And a lot of stuff's ending. Game of Thrones going away. Expanse almost went away.
Yeah, it's definitely different. Yeah. I think there's always an ebb and flow to these shows, and I feel like this is probably a year that's sort of on the downswing. But that being said, you know, I think next year, then the year after that, we're going to see a lot of Marvel Phase 4 stuff. We're going to see a lot of,
part of what we're waiting for with Marvel and what I would assume the reason behind them pulling out of this show, they didn't pull it out entirely. They were there on the floor, and they still did their Shield, and they still did Cloak and Dagger, and they still did Iron Fist, but there were no movies. Marvel movies were not on the floor at all or anywhere.
Yeah.
No big set pieces on the floor. It was just kind of their stage. My assumption is that they are in a holding pattern until the second
box.
They're in two separate holding patterns. One is that they have nothing to promote because there's nothing they can promote around Infinity War that isn't like just spoilerific, essentially, and doesn't throw tell you what's going to happen. So I think next year will happen after all of that has ended, and we'll be in the next phase and Fox stuff will have been worked out. And yeah, I could see Marvel being much bigger. Game, like HBO will have to be here in full force because their $1 million baby is going to be gone. So they're going to need to promote whatever the heck they're going to show to the nerd convention
There's a new Joss Whedon show that just got picked up.
There's prequels to Game of Thrones. There's a bunch of stuff that they're going to try and sell everybody, so we'll see.
They're saying maybe Deadwood is going to come back for a couple movies. So
sounds like they're just out of ideas.
Yeah.
Sounds like they're like, oh, God, Game of Thrones is ending. What? I don't know, more Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
And then what else do people like? Deadwood? Yeah, sure, we'll do more
Deadwood.
Bring
back Fraggle Rock, guys.
Yeah. So we'll see. But I agree, a little bit of a weird off year. Like all those panels I talked about, Bob's Burgers, Deadly Class, Magicians, Venture Brothers, I walked into them, like just walked directly in with no line, which has never happened. Bob's Burgers, I waited for 3 hours one year and didn't get in.
Yeah.
Venture Brothers, I've waited for 2 hours before. Magicians, I only walked right into the first year, and then the second year I had to wait for like 2 hours to get. Like these panels are usually just packed, and I walked directly into them. So I don't know what happened.
I wonder if they secretly sold less tickets. It's weird to me.
I think they sold less tickets.
Yeah.
I really do. The floor, though, was packed
at
times. Yeah, the floor on Saturday was a nightmare. Yeah. So, like, we were telling a story on the way back from dinner tonight. You weren't there, but we were telling a story about how Melissa and I were walking up towards the Marvel booth, and they were bringing the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. crew over. So it was Chloe Bennett and, oh boy, the guy who plays Mac. I'm going to forget everybody's real name. It was the whole cast.
Yeah.
It was, you know, everybody. They were all walking up, and it was, you know, crowds of people kind of around them, and they're getting walked up by security. They go straight to the booth, and everybody's crowding up to the Marvel booth, and it was like crazy, you know, it was packed. So we cut to go like in front of it, and DC and Marvel were like catty corner from each other this year. So they're like, DC's on the diagonal from Marvel, and then all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, like screams of like death were going on all of a sudden, and then just thousands of people rushing over to the DC booth. And I turned and I looked at Melissa and I was like, it's got to be Jason Momoa. Like, it can't be. No one else would elicit this insanity. And sure enough, he's walking up the stairs and he's waving to everybody.
Yeah.
And like, people that were at S.H.I.E.L.D. like flooded over. Jason Momoa was the biggest draw on the freaking floor. Like, there were just thousands of people around the DC booth and it was all crowded in. And we just, we turned and walked the opposite direction. We're like, we're never getting through this. So we turned around and walked away. But even turning around and walking away, like, mind you, there were like, literally thousands of people around DC, and it was still, the rest of the floor was a nightmare. So I think that a lot of people were shopping this year. I think a lot of people were just walking around the floor, gathering that stuff up and not going to panels as heavily. And I don't know if it's because the panels weren't, you know, Hall H HBO and Hall H Marvel Cinematic Universe, or if the tone of the show is changing, or
also
if they,
I think
I don't
a
know.
Lot of the information becomes available so quickly now.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about it too.
You
it's
know,
all
it's
on YouTube
like,
immediately.
Yeah. It's like, you know, that immediacy, like to learn it first, like that barely exists anymore.
Yeah,
you know, it's out there so quickly. So unless you're like such a fan,
jerks like us,
Well, this will be out in like a month, but you know what I mean.
You heard it here 40th.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've heard that many times before. But yeah, it's weird, and you know, understanding Comic-Con is something I don't think I'll ever get, even after coming here for so many years of my life and so many summers. But it's still a great show. I'm glad I came. You know, got great exercise, that's for sure.
Yeah. My feet hurt. I did it all in Vans too.
Well, that's
don't brave, look down on my gross toes. My toes are gross.
Yeah, I got the same thing, man. You heard it here first.
We've got gross toes.
Gross toes. Thank you guys so much for listening to episode, what is this,
312
of
the Amber is
podcast.
The color of your energy.
Down. Sorry, everyone.
That's all we got for all 300s. Every 300 episode.
Oh, boy.
How about just the 310s? Everything in the 310 range. We'll sing a 311 song.
100%.
I'll learn a new song for every episode.
You guys can follow us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. You can send us an email, nerds@nerdappropriate.com. And you can go to our Facebook page, which is /NerdAppropriate on Facebook. Like I said earlier, we're going to have lots of bonus episodes in your feed with all the interviews and some extra bonus audio content for you. So keep your ears peeled and your eyes tuned. That's how it works. All right. Later, guys. Bye.
Yeah. All Mixed Up. That's another song I forgot about that was theirs.
Very nice.